Hello and welcome to episode 11 of the Tux Radar podcast. I am not Mike Saunders. That's because the cloud's just gone across the sun. Isn't here.
I can't
actually describe effectively how we feel with Mike's absence, because there is a dark cloud in the room.
I'm sad.
So we're going to try and muddle through as best we can and just hope that Mike's back with us in a couple of weeks' time. I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Jonathan Roberts.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
And I'm Efrain Hernandez.
I think Mike then goes on to say something like, in this episode, we've got news things about Magaya, ASUS, Oracle News with LibreOffice, our discoveries of the week. Then there's You Dare Us, another success.
We're really pretty terrible at this about Mike.
Yeah. A Speak Your Brain section. Mike has sent us a couple of Speak Your Brains messages. And then finishing up with the open ballot. Don't forget, Mike usually says, you can subscribe to Linux Format at tuxradar.com/subscribe. Please do. It keeps us all in a job.
And you can also, we should say as well, we found out over the last couple of weeks, you can like us on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
When you like Linux Format or Tux Radar, you should go and like us so that we can beat Tux Radar.
That makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Liking things.
I think the bosses like it.
Yeah.
People like us.
Please our bosses. When our bosses are happy, they hit us less hard.
Yes. Oh, Mike, come back. Okay, I'll do the news. Mike usually does such a fantastic job of the news. His first news story, he even gave us our notes for today. I mean,
I know. Coughing and
what a man.
And
so, Magaya, the distribution we cannot pronounce.
Magaya.
I mean, there is a mage in there, so it's Magaya. It's a bit like Magic, which has the Mandrake connection because it is a community fork of Mandriva. 1.0 has been released. It's not that different to Mandriva or the Mandriva that's going to be released in a few weeks' time or the last version of Mandriva. But that doesn't mean that there hasn't been an awful lot of effort expended on this release, because it's been done by volunteers. They've created new artwork. They've rebuilt all of the packages. They've moved everything over to their own repositories and their own community systems, their own websites, their own release schedules, their own workloads. I've used it. I think it's fantastic and it's brilliant, and it feels great to have a community-based Mandriva distribution in the DistroWatch hit list. It's a great distribution.
Is it KDE 4?
Interestingly, you can choose between KDE and GNOME at install time. But yes, it's KDE 4.6.3, which is the very latest version. GNOME 2.x, so no GNOME shell. Because they didn't want to make any big changes, I don't think. They're going to look at 3 for the next release. But it isn't a feature. It isn't a feature fest, this, in terms of adding new functionality to a distribution. It's about getting a community release out. And I think congratulations to the team. They've done a great job.
I think, just like you said, it's a massive amount of work to put a distribution together. And
Yeah,
to do it and to go from scratch to nothing and build up all those resources and tools.
And Jonathan's really just written a fantastic article on what goes behind the scenes at Fedora when they put the distribution together. So, you know, if there's anything like that amount of work,
it's mind-blowing to do it from scratch.
And I mean, the fact that they've been able to organize themselves, you know, from a standing start, 6 months ago to get to this point.
And now I think they have a community of, 100 plus developers worldwide who are helping out. So, you know, they're building a community and they're doing a really tough job. So, excellent stuff.
Yeah, so hopefully in the future, it'll become a force to be reckoned with. And it's great to see a usable, hardware-compatible distribution that could compete with Ubuntu.
Although, is anyone ever so slightly sad at the prospect of yet another distribution?
Well, no, because it's effectively replacing Mandriva.
Do you think it's replacing Mandriva?
Yeah. Well, there is going to be a Mandriva release, so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
But a Mandriva release that's now been rendered pointless and irrelevant.
Mm. Kind of like OpenOffice and LibreOffice.
Yeah. Second news item is the news that ASUS is going to ship Ubuntu on 3 new netbooks. Mike's written down here that it's going to be Ubuntu 10.10. A Canonical Canonical's PR phoned me up last week, actually, with the news as well. And they said
Did they embargo you?
Well, I think it was the same day that this announcement was made, and they said that they don't know how much it's going to cost, though Andy Chanel said it's going to be a couple hundred pounds in our news section. And they don't know when they're going to be available. So the fact that they're already saying it's definitely going to be Ubuntu 10.10 when it might be out after Ubuntu 11.10 seems a bit odd. However, it's great news that ASUS has gone back to putting Linux onto its netbooks. And it'll be interesting to see what a native Unity experience is on one of those things, because presumably they'll spend some time making it work and not crash.
I'd love to speak to someone from ASUS about that as well and find out why they decided to go back to it.
Yeah.
What distro did they use originally? One of them had...
Had that Fedora. Limpus, yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
Was that...
It was hideous.
Was that Acer or Asus?
I think that was Acer.
Because whichever one it was, it was a big bag of spanners.
Well, the thing is, I think the netbook thing caught everybody off guard. They obviously put Limpus on because it was cheap to put together and they could just put it on as many devices as they want. And then when everyone started complaining that the usability might not be up to par, it was like, well, we didn't expect millions of people to buy them.
That's just such an epic fail.
Yeah.
Epic commercial planning fail. We didn't expect it to be good.
I guess so. that's my guess.
We shipped rubbish. Sorry, people are buying it.
Yeah, that's a really lame excuse. So.
Yeah.
We meant to sell loads of laptops, but we didn't know that.
Did they say why? Sorry, Effie. Oh. Did they say why it was 10.10 and not 11.04? Because the whole point with Unity is that it's up for smaller screens.
Mm, that's true. So it's not going to have Unity, is it?
Unless this is interesting. I'd like to.
Yeah.
I'd like to know more.
Yeah. We need to know more. I asked if we can get one, and they said, well, we'll add you to the list.
Thanks. There is nothing, there's nothing wrong with Ubuntu 10.10 though.
It's one of the best Linux experiences you can have. Definitely. Yeah, it's great. So cool. I think it's great that Linux is on new hardware. The final news story is another good piece of news. Really, is that Oracle has given OpenOffice.org to the Apache Foundation, which I think took everybody by surprise, because the Apache license is a fantastic license under which to release free software. And if only they'd done it 12 months ago before the LibreOffice fork, it might have made a bigger difference. I don't know what this is going to mean, whether the two can be merged or not, or whether LibreOffice can also move to an Apache license.
Has the Apache Foundation accepted it?
I don't know.
Because I know they didn't accept it straight away. They were deliberating on it, but I never heard the outcome of...
Do you know why?
I didn't... I was so lazy, I just read the headline and skipped the rest. But I kind of assume that it's because... I don't know, really. I guess they were wondering with LibreOffice whether it was sensible to take it on and to encourage OpenOffice anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what my assumption was, but I didn't read the article, so that's entirely... baseless.
Well, maybe they wouldn't have to do anything with it other than maybe kind of oversee the source code being merging with LibreOffice.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they did, but I hope they keep the LibreOffice name.
Oh, so much better than OpenOffice. So do I. Mm. Also, it's like x.org, you know, it marks a changing emphasis and a change of the whole development team.
Yeah,
I don't
think
they go back to OpenOffice.org.
But I like it that there's no pointless.org tacked on the end.
Yeah, that's the most important thing about it.
Okay, well, quite a couple of weeks for news. That's all we've got.
Hemos llegado a nuestra gustadísima sección, el descubrimiento de la semana.
Woo! That's so awesome. I feel like I'm on holiday.
Corona?
Oh, no! You torturers.
Torturous in this small office.
Tacos, nachos. This is discovery of the week. Who would like to start? Graham?
I have got an awesome discovery.
Wow.
I can't believe I didn't discover this before. The trouble is that it's a bit difficult to explain because it's a bit audio geeky in my kind of audio.
Really, Graham? Audio geekery before the performance.
I have to get this right. I've just made a note of what the actual application is called. It's called Ionix. And what it is it generates messages. It's an application that generates messages. It specifically generates UDP messages or OSC messages, which is the Open Sound Control Protocol, or HTTP messages. And then you can do anything you want with those messages. But it generates these messages by following paths on lines and curves and circles. So it's really difficult to explain.
Really confused.
And to actually, so what happens is you create a circle, you draw a circle, and then when you start the application off, you press play, and a point will move around the circle, and the X and Y location of that point will be sent as a message to UDP or HTTP or OSC. And then it's up to you what you do with that message. You could actually turn it into an additive synth, or you could turn it into different fades on a light show,
so
or actually
some kind
control
of
anything.
Geometric,
it could be
generated music.
Yeah, that's the obvious choice for it, but it could do absolutely anything. You can actually add triggers. So when that point moves past a certain point, the trigger actually creates a new different kind of message, and you can create as many of those different points as you want. Now, I know nobody's going to be able to see this, but here's one I was doing on the station while I was waiting. Now you can create, this is all written in simple kind of JavaScript, although it's also really good GUI as well. If I just press play, you'll see all the points.
Can you describe it for the
listeners? What I've done is it's actually a load of lines, paths, going into a central point. And on those paths, there's the cursor for each point. Now, all those cursors will move in parallel, and each will create a separate message. And then you can program a synth to actually respond to that message. If I press play, you'll see what happens. So here are the points coming out. And then when they get to the end, they restart. Now, you can do anything with those controller messages. So if you could program the harmonics of a sound. So each one of those lines is a specific harmonic. So you get a constantly evolving sound. But just as much, there could be lights. It could be an array of lights in different colors, and you'd actually see them coming on and off. You could actually do with it whatever you wanted to do, and you can construct massive, really complicated ones of these.
That's a really interesting way of going about kind of producing art, I guess, basically.
Yeah. It's an amazing application. It's really, really good. I can't believe I hadn't heard about it before.
So can you say, for instance, on all those lines, if you add points to all those lines and then allocate, for instance, a sound?
The thing is, it generates messages and sends them out of the application. Then you can do with them whatever you want to. You can actually write a program to process them, or you can create a synth that would process them.
It doesn't actually have
any sound built in.
Yeah. That would be even better.
It was developed with actually, there's a fantastic Association Française d'Informatique Musicale in France, which puts money into projects like this. They've done some in the past where developers work together on really interesting kind of side projects, and it's just fascinating what you know. And the Linux version is brilliant. It's Linux OS 10 and Windows versions of it. And I find that kind of stuff really, really interesting because you can do whatever you want with the data. I can actually show you the amount of data that's generated. I mean, obviously nobody can actually see it. Oops. My own, here. This is the cursors creating all of this data. You can see X and Y for each cursor. So each one of those cursors is creating a ton of data as it scrolls down.
Very well.
And so you can capture that. That's going out in OSC. OSC is used by musical instruments. And you can do with it whatever you want. You're usually in something like Pure Data or Max MSP. It's just brilliant.
It is. The pattern that's going on is constantly changing.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It depends on how you write it. It doesn't have to be like that. You could create a very simple circle and it could just go around that. It's just the way that the start point for each one of those cursors is slightly delayed.
Yeah.
So by the time they get to the end, you get this. You can generate fractals as well because it's JavaScript.
Right, yeah.
You can actually do anything you want.
Yeah, and JavaScript is actually a really great language. It's really enjoyable to write in and use. For my limited programming knowledge, I've enjoyed JavaScript more than I ever enjoyed Python, so...
Well, it doesn't get in the way of an idea. You can just do the idea. You don't have to be brilliant. It doesn't matter how you particularly do it.
Yeah.
You know, you can just do it.
From what I've read of people talking about JavaScript, it's a bit like, you know, like you can play puns on it and stuff. It's a very flexible language. So,
well, let's do a tutorial on it.
JavaScript.
Let's do a tutorial on JavaScript.
Isn't someone doing that already?
Let's maybe. I need to email him, give him a deadline and stuff.
So what is the name of that application?
It's called, it's got a weird name, I-A-N-N-I-X, Eanix.
That's absolutely fantastic.
It's difficult to describe.
From an arty point of view, when you get a chance to see it, guys, honestly, it's fantastic. It looks absolutely awesome.
Can we put a screen recording up of your animation, not animation, but your output on, on the blog?
Yeah, probably.
To go with the episode.
Maybe not today. We're recording this on the day the podcast goes out. Yeah. So probably only just have enough time to do it. But yeah, maybe do a tutorial on it. Something more on it or something on Tux Radar.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Ryan.
Fantastic.
Jonathan, you're next.
Mine's also music related, actually. But came across it. You've probably already seen this if you follow Boing Boing. It was on there. There's a link to this new, really, well, not new, it's about 10 months old, I guess, music magazine, online magazine called Ramen Music. And it's put together by an independent music musician. And they wanted a space where musicians could have their work promoted and get most of the money from the promotion without it going to record labels or venues and without it getting ripping them off. And also a space where, you know, you can find out more about the musicians, and it's in a really nice format. It's not on some scummy, you know, Blogspot blog with a default template and stuff. And what they've created is a really
aristocrat. Some scummy default template blog.
Well, you know, like you go out to a shop and you buy a CD and you get this amazing album artwork to go with it. I don't know about you guys, but I used to love getting back and reading the album artwork after buying a new album and leafing through the lyrics or whatever.
Kids today.
I never made like the transition from vinyl to CD, so I don't know what you're talking about.
It was good. I loved it. And this is really nice because you go onto their website and it's released every 2 months, this magazine, I guess you call it. It's released every 2 months and you load up a webpage and it's got, at the top, you can just hit play all on all of the tracks and the page will automatically scroll down through the whole page to each section for each track. And then not only does it play the track, but it has a big, like, nice blown up picture, really usually nice pictures of the musician. And it has a brief interview with them, and it's quite interesting, you know, they talk about the track, they talk about their music, what they're doing and stuff. It's only brief, like, you know, maybe 400 words, if that. And then there's links to find out more. Sometimes there's videos included, so you can see their videos. And then it will just progress the whole way through the magazine automatically, like listening to an album, but with all this great artwork and information alongside it. And you really have to try it to believe it. It is subscription supported. It uses the same model as Linux Weekly News. So I think it's $29 for a year's subscription. And subscribers can share a link to an issue to anybody they like. So you can go and then see an issue and listen to it and then subscribe if you want to see past issues or future issues. And I think $29 is really great value. It was really fantastic. And it wasn't just that it was a great experience. It was, you know, one of the best online experiences I've had. It's like that New York Times Chrome app. It's really genuinely great. It's not just like a normal web page. And
it did look brilliant. You sent us a link to it.
Fantastic.
You could really lose yourself in it, which is what you want.
And I did, you know, I put my headphones on one afternoon. I just listened through the whole thing. And every time the track moved on, I listened, I flipped back and read the information and checked out the pictures.
Yeah.
It was really, really enjoyable. And the music selection, it's not just a great experience, but the selection of music in it as well. You know, there was quite a wide selection.
It's not just their mates then.
No, it's not just their mates. And it's genuinely really good music. And I don't know if it was just a lucky issue and it was stuff that I quite liked, or, you know, it's always that kind of music, or there's a bigger variety. I don't know, but it was fantastic quality and fantastic selection. So as soon as I finished buying furniture for my unfurnished flat, I'm going to purchase a subscription, and probably to Linux Weekly News too. But until that point, I'm skint. So
awesome.
Oh, that's awesome. Andrew?
So many discoveries.
Whoa.
So many. Too many discoveries.
Christopher Columbus.
I am.
The Tux Radar podcast.
I'm the Christopher Columbus of data centers. But this week I am sponsored by 1&1. I went to, they very kindly flew me out to look at two of their data centers yesterday and the day before. And you imagine it's just a, you know, a room with some servers in, but the extent to which they go to everything's got a failsafe, and the failsafe's got a failsafe, and the failsafe's got a failsafe, and everything's backed up in about a million different places. And it's just weird. They've got a diesel engine that's come out of a ship, but they've got like four or five of them, like, in this building, in case the two connections to the national grid fail, and in case the batteries fail. They've got so many backups. God. And this diesel engine is absolutely spotless. It's how you imagine a diesel engine would look if it were in a really high-tech German company.
Mission Impossible.
So,
how big is the main warehouse area then? Is it like half a football pitch?
That's, I don't know. I like half a football pitch, or number of Nelson's columns, or number of tennis courts, or something. Germans like a large number of square meters, which is impossible to remember. I don't know. Many, many square meters. It's big. It's really big.
That's the way that it should be.
Just no
metrics.
You can't conceptualize 400 square meters. It doesn't make any sense.
Yes, you can.
Well, whatever.
Okay, continue.
Narrowing it down from that experience, I think discovery number one, German food, not all terrible.
It's high praise.
Give us an example, please.
Well,
chocolate cake, surely.
It's I don't like chocolate, you big girl. It's
German chocolate cake.
It was in Baden-Württemberg, and there's really big ravioli. Like three really big ravioli on a plate with...
What, just the ravioli was like this? The size of my ear?
Probably, I don't know, 0.5% of a tennis court.
What was filled with what?
Filled with pork and beef.
That sounds fantastic.
Really big. And, nice asparagus and ham and lovely soup.
Cucumber.
I braved the cucumber, yes. I didn't know whether it was German or Spanish. I just took a chance. It's like a crazy chance.
It wasn't the cucumber. It wasn't the bean sprouts. We don't know.
But the other awesome thing, there's lots and lots of technical data. I'm sure I will get around to writing something, possibly for the blog, about my adventures. But the coolest single thing is that to eliminate spikes in the local power supply, the national grid supplies, they've got a big flywheel in the basement, and so they power the flywheel the grid, and then the flywheel generates its own electricity supply.
That's crazy.
So simple. They've got so much high-tech stuff going on, and this is a really basic, simple idea that just protects them from fluctuations. Mm.
The amount of thought that's gone into protecting people's scummy WordPress.
And the thing is, you walk around these huge numbers of rack servers, and it's just MySpace pages, goth girls.
Does that make your heart sink a little bit?
It's discussion pages.
You're so right.
It's GNU.org's FAQ on the GNU/Linux. And it's pornography. And it's kittens.
Yeah.
They do like some lolcats.
But yeah, the flywheel. German food not being all terrible. And a flywheel.
That's fantastic.
Awesome discoveries.
Well, I don't have that many discoveries today. But after 3 months of working in the house that I'm renovating, I discovered that I really hate DIY. I just detest it.
You told me that the first 3 days.
Effie, we've known that you hate DIY for years now.
But honestly, last night it was just completely highlighted in my brain that is how much I dislike renovation.
What, did your glass wall fall down?
It didn't. It actually worked until I got to the very last brick.
Is it a glass wall like this?
It's like this one. We're in an office with a glass block wall.
Like you find in some urinals.
Yeah, so more or less. That's my house, a urinal. And I built the whole thing until I got to the top right corner, and I realized I couldn't fit the block on that space. And if I pushed it a little bit too hard, it would have gone to the other side of the wall without anyone catching it. So it was really difficult, and it took me an hour to put one block. I finished at 1 o'clock in the morning building this thing. And
what time did you start?
About 11, in the morning. So a beautiful thing. So an advice for all those people who want to buy a house to renovate and all that, because it's very romantic, and don't do it.
Pay someone to do it.
Yeah, pay someone if you got the chance.
Or alternatively, measure the space that you want to fill, measure the bricks, and do some basic maths.
I did. The problem
were you using qubits or hand spans?
The problem with that is more physical than mathematical. It was just the fact that if you push that, there's no one else there to catch it.
So the brick fits. Getting it lined up.
Yeah, the advice would be if you're building a glass block wall, have someone else on the other side of the wall to give you a hand.
You have three children. You have loads of manpower.
George is not tall enough to.
Couldn't you put him on top of the stepladder?
I did. It failed.
Okay, George, catch the brick.
See, that's what I did. That's where I went wrong. 2 years old.
2 years old.
Oh, it's quite keen though.
It's like Lego, isn't it?
That's one discovery. The other discovery is that I installed the latest version of Ubuntu on my laptop, and Unity doesn't work because apparently my graphics card is not modern enough or fast enough or has the specs to run Unity. Isn't that annoying?
It is really annoying. Yeah.
So why didn't they just, I don't know.
Why didn't it default to Unity 2D? I don't understand where Unity 2D fits.
I think that is the problem, because it sent me straight back to use classic mode on Ubuntu.
Yeah, because Unity 2D is not available yet.
Isn't it?
Well, by default, they didn't finish development on it. They started it too late.
It seemed quite good when I used it.
Yeah, when we demonstrated it. It looks exactly the same, but
should have had that sorted out.
Well, yeah, because it's the kind. I think what happened is they started, and this is great, you know, and then they started realizing it doesn't work on everyone's computers, and there's going to be a lot of really annoyed people, and they thought we better do something about this, and they just realized too late. And
yeah,
but it's silly if you understand that many people use Linux to sort of resurrect their old machines.
Yeah.
It should be put in place. Yeah. Surely. I think.
Shirley.
I am serious.
Who's Shirley?
Anyway, that was my two discoveries. So we reached the end of El Descubrimiento de la Semana.
Awesome work.
Thank you, Effie.
Thanks, right. Effie.
Anytime.
Muy bueno. Schön.
Sorry, I don't speak Czechoslovakian.
Is this the halfway point?
Yeah.
It seems like it.
What does Mike say? Okay, this is the halfway point. still to come. You dare us. Speak your brains. Open ballot. So look forward to that. Let's get on with it.
Awesome. Okay, so now it is now. Yeah,
time for
you
dare us. Let's do it.
Awesome.
Don't wait.
Tells me, he points at me and says,
Yeah.
Even winks usually. So time for you dare us. We had a really fantastic challenge for this episode, but I think we've actually all failed at it. It's bad. Yeah. So the challenge was that we had to find a bug, and I think we said submit a bug report.
It was your idea, wasn't it?
No, someone suggested it to us, and I suggested it on the show. Anyway, we had to find a bug, or find a bug and report it, or, in my opinion, get help fixing it, I think is a nice broad thing. So my experience is I'm drawing on a bug that I've had filed or been a part of on Mutter, the GNOME-free window manager, since I started here at Linux Format, so this is now, I'm in my third month.
Already? And
yeah, already. Yeah. I know. It's scary, isn't it? But yeah, once I pass my third month, they can't fire me without 4 weeks' notice. So
we need to fire him really soon.
I didn't file the bug. Someone else did. I confirmed it, and other people have confirmed it. There's now probably 4 or 5 separate people confirming this bug exists, and it's very, very annoying. and not a single developer, no one's triaged it, no developers commented on it, suggested a fix, suggested where the problem might be, suggested that it's even being worked on or being considered.
What is the problem? Is it easy to describe?
So, yeah, the problem is just that if you've got two monitors connected, Focus randomly switches between windows, and if they're tiled, they'll randomly switch onto the other monitor.
Oh, it sounds like a horrible
it's
bug.
It's very annoying. When you just go to type something, and then as you're typing it, the other window appears, and it's annoying. It's not the end of the world. And actually, if anyone else is suffering from this, if you just make sure you have one window open on each window, it stops it. It keeps it from happening. So just have a terminal or something open in the other desktop.
Right.
And but it's annoying and it's quite disappointing that no one's done it. Because, you know, GNOME is a big project.
Mm.
And, you know, GNOME 3 was a big release. It's bound to have bugs and stuff. That's understandable. But there should really be more triaging going on, you know. Just someone to step in and say, we've seen your problem.
Yeah.
We know that it's not the most serious. We're dealing with other problems. But we'll get back to it or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a disappointing result. And my other experience, I've been trying to chase up another bug as well, with my backlight not being controllable after suspend. I've just been doing that in the Arch forums, and someone has been responding to me and helping me work through it, but yet to get to the solution of that. So, you know, Arch forums are friendly and helpful, and someone's commented, and it's a bit of an obscure problem. So, you know, some
hardware specific.
Yeah, but that someone's, you know, making suggestions and feedback is really great. So,
yeah.
But I wish someone would at least comment on this GNOME bug.
Well, you've done more than I think the rest of the three of us put together.
Everyone has been busy.
Thanks, John. We have. We have been really busy.
Yeah, I was up till 2 a.m. finishing an article this month.
Yeah. We had to finish the magazine for the Tuesday. It's just gone. And then since then, Andrew's been in Germany and we've just been too busy.
Yeah.
Mike, that's a crap excuse.
That's a poor excuse. We've been busy making the world's best Linux magazine.
It is true. And it's a really great issue.
it is. The Inside Fedora piece in particular.
Yeah.
A lot of work went into that.
Yeah. Oh, rewriting it at midnight or whatever was a good plan.
And it looks beautiful as well.
Yeah. Effie's got some amazing illustrations included and.
So we've let everyone down, really, by taking on something that we couldn't do for the first time.
I found a bug in Unity, which I meant to... I mean, obviously,
that's
not hard. When the in the top left, there's the home folder, home button.
Yeah.
Which, when... If you don't have Nautilus open, do they still use Nautilus? If you don't have the file browser thing open, it opens your home folder. If you already have another folder open, it just refocuses on the folder that you already have open.
Yeah.
So it doesn't open a separate instance.
That's how
Nautilus
shell behaves as well.
But then why label it home? Why not label it files?
That's a good point. Yeah.
It's probably not a bug. Strictly speaking,
it's a bug.
It's a usability bug, then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a technical bug, but it's...
Wow.
So it's a feature. It's not a bug.
Yeah. Well, at least that is something.
Well, that's what I found a bug.
Yeah. That's something more than me.
Well, I found the problem with the DVD playback on Ubuntu, the latest version of Ubuntu, and this is the first time I come across with any distribution. It doesn't just, it plays any DVD ROM, but not DVD films.
Yeah, it's an old problem though. It's because the code to do it relies on secret keys and reverse engineering.
Right.
Which was cracked a long time ago.
Yeah. It's all to do with license, patenting of software in America, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, but also those keys aren't redistributable.
Right.
Under some terms.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah.
In the US, isn't it? It's copy circumvention.
Because I don't know, do other countries in the world have, like, I know, like, I don't think it's an issue in the EU. I don't know why we have to suffer this incompatibility in the EU because of an American problem. Why can't the Americans have it? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a really good point. We should just have a really brilliant European Linux distribution and...
Screw them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we could have some sort of... governing body for Europe, some sort of parliament where we could elect people to do what we want them to do.
And pay people compensation for things that go wrong.
So if they like come from a really long way away,
like
then they could get, because it's not fair to make them get that, use their own bus fare. We could like reimburse them in a form of expenses.
It's a good idea. It's a good idea.
I'll look into it.
Nice. Well, so, back onto a topic of you dare us. No, it's no problem. So we failed miserably, but perhaps we could rescue this slightly. If you want to leave a comment on this episode telling us about your experiences of filing bug reports, then, you know, it might encourage other people to do the same. You might have had better experiences than we've had. You might have reported a bug. And, you know, then perhaps maybe it will turn into like your conversion stories, your bug reporting and bug fixing stories. And it might encourage other people to do the same. So please, please, please do log on and tell us your experiences. It would be fantastic.
And if you mention your most annoying bug, you know, maybe we can do something about that. Maybe we can, you know, chase the developers.
Yeah, we could use the power of Linux format.
Yeah. Maybe not as a You Dare Us challenge because we'd just fail. But if we do it for the magazine, we might actually get around to it.
Okay, so next week, we're going to pick something that we think is actually manageable, or next time. And our challenge is, thanks again, Alan Pope, because these were two fantastic suggestions. We're going to try and install a distribution with our eyes closed to find out what it's like to be a visually impaired user using a computer, installing a system. And Andrew has even volunteered to do it. So basically, I'm handing off all responsibility to him for this month.
Well, what we could do is we could actually all meet up together and actually just do it. You know, if we actually arrange a time, we'll actually do it. Maybe.
In the dark room.
Maybe.
It'll be good. I'm excited about this. I have no idea what it's like. So.
I hope it's not Arch after having to call Arch. Anyway, brilliant. Thanks, John.
No problem.
It's now time for another one of Mike's brilliant sections, Speak Your Brains. He did send us some brains that have spoken.
Just in a jar. <That's so brilliant. laughs>
So I'll read a couple of them out. The first one is from Michael Love. He says, does anyone else have trouble selecting a distro appropriate for an old computer? After trying out several lightweight distributions, I usually succeed. It would be nice to have a better chance of getting it right first time. Is there some sort of numerical index of a computer's capability that matches up with an index pertaining to a distro's expected performance on that hardware configuration? If there is not, would you at Linux Format want to address this situation? Perhaps an algorithm springs from the group's mind.
It sounds like verified for Vista.
Yeah, there is like a number, isn't there, on Windows systems performance.
Which is, I think, was a brilliant, brilliant marketing move by Microsoft, because they're admitting that it doesn't run very well on a lot of computers, but they've managed to spin that around and sell it.
But just being honest about things is what people really care about. You don't you don't mind if it doesn't necessarily work on everything, but you want to know before you buy it.
I think, I think that's just admitting Microsoft's failure and confuses most people. It's very difficult to actually come up with a number that means anything. I mean, if you say it's 20 and you've got the wrong graphics chipset in your laptop and it doesn't work, it's just that, you know, you're going to blame it.
Well, that's a 20 on Mint but a 5 on Ubuntu then.
Well, I mean, one of the great things about Mandriva actually is it has the fantastic hardware compatibility list.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, it's really, really comprehensive. It's one of the things that the Magia team have to try and emulate. And maybe there's a way of tying up a simple piece of software like most distributions have for generating a profile, like an LSPCI. And then doing a diff against, you know, some kind of hardware compatibility database and then giving you some kind of metric.
Like, or perhaps, like, I don't know, because, Fedora has Smolt, doesn't it? Which collects and surely it would be a matter of running a script, you know, to run the Mesa demos. What is it? The thing that makes the cog spin.
The gears.
The gears, GLX gears. Maybe it could run that and run a few other benchmarks and just get the results of the benchmarks. And if it runs 3D, it will say yes, yes, yes. Surely that could be automated.
Yeah, and maybe
to a basic level.
Yeah, and then manufacturers just put in that live CD.
Yeah,
and then they copy the paste the results onto their website.
And not even necessarily manufacturers, just any user who's got that.
Yes. You're right.
That hardware, it would be. I don't know. I'm not a coder. I'm not a programmer. I don't know, but I would imagine. I'd like to imagine. Yeah, maybe I'll get in touch with the guy who wrote Smalt and see what he says.
A live CD that you can put into your computers, check it against hardware compatibility database. That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Okay, second brain is David's. He says, after years of hearing Grub being fearfully bypassed during the In the Hot Seat section, remember those days? Mm. I, and I'm sure others, want to finally hear your thoughts on Grub. Speak your brains, guys, he says.
Oh, God.
Grub was an ongoing joke. Well, it wasn't. It wasn't really a joke. It was really on the wheel of misfortune, where we pretended to avoid talking about Grub for about 2 years.
It's scary, though.
Grub does a fantastic fundamental job, you know. It's incredibly flexible. It would be easy enough, I suppose, to talk about it for a minute, but I mean, having used Chameleon, which is used by a lot of Hackintosh people to get their OS X machines booting, Chameleon dynamically recognizes Linux partitions, Windows partitions, and OS X partitions and just adds them as an icon to the boot menu.
What, so you don't have to do any configuration?
I don't have to do anything.
Wow, that's cool.
And so when I create a new Linux partition and use Chameleon, it just appears. You have to actually have Grub on the first block of the partition on the MPR. So you still have to go through Grub with Chameleon.
So is Chameleon in the EFI section of the disk?
I think it's actually on the MBR.
Right, okay.
OS X obviously needs the EFI section of the disk, but the rest of Chameleon is on an OS X formatted partition.
Right.
Well, that's the bit that it uses. I think because it's themed, the rest of it is on OS X rather than the EFI partition. Right. But I think you can install it on the EFI partition.
Just wonder how we do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Linux has a boot partition sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, we can make that a standard. Anyway, whatever the answer is, wherever the data needs to live, it'd be nice if it was dynamic and still had all the power if people wanted to hack it. That's my main feeling about Grub. But it's great. The fact that you can edit boot options from the boot menu is incredible and saved my life lots of times.
I think Grub is tricky because different distros have their own interpretations of how it works. When you, for instance, if you're setting up a dual booting system and you install, you know, Fedora first and Ubuntu second, Ubuntu will recognize Fedora. It will display it in, or it will even ask you what you want to call the Fedora system in Grub. Like there'll be a graphical menu will come up and you can rename it or Fedora 14 or other distro or whatever, but Fedora just tramples all over it. And it's so subjective from one distro to the next. So a lot of what Grub does is hidden almost or obfuscated from the end user. You just see it as, oh, Ubuntu is really clever, when it's actually Grub.
Yeah. Mm. It's like a lot of Linux, it's massively over-engineered for a million different kinds of possibilities, which makes it difficult. I mean,
that's what I like Grub too, from the point of view of it hides itself.
Yeah.
You know, once it's configured, it hides itself and you don't see it when you start it up unless you hold down shift or whatever when you start. And then you don't really care about your bootloader, do you?
Well, I think if you kind of install different distributions with regularity.
Yeah, which I just don't, so.
I do have a couple. And so having installed Arch yesterday, you know, then having to mess around with Grub is a pain.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
And it's a bit arcane in the way that you can't... I'm used to editing the menu LST file from Grub 1 days. I still can't get used to the fact that I need to run an auto-generation script. Mm. It's just... There must be an easy way. I know there are GUIs, actually, but I've never used one, never looked at them.
Running the script rather than changing the configuration file seems like a leap of logic.
And it's not like the rest of Linux where you go into whatever configuration file. Oh, there it is. It's there.
Yeah.
A chain loader. What's a chain loader? our final brain is Leonard Brown. He says, I was testing GNUmeric. numeric for a day and found a nifty feature that I would love to be duplicated exactly in LibreOffice Calc. The search tool works exactly as a spreadsheet search tool should. I wasn't quite as happy with the other numeric features, so I still use LibreOffice Calc for me for now. If you could convince the developers of LibreOffice Calc to replace their search feature with the one in numeric, all other spreadsheet applications will be irrelevant to anyone looking for a feature-rich application. Or maybe you can just get some other feedback. So what he wants us to do is do a shout out to the LibreOffice guys to put numeric search field in their calc. So I don't know much about either of them. I do use spreadsheets, but I try and put it out in my mind.
Well, if we were to finally get that interview with Michael Meeks, we could possibly ask him then.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
His PR team say he's desperately, desperately busy.
Is there anyone else on LibreOffice on the team who we could interview?
I'm sure there is. Yeah,
must be.
Maybe we should. We should interview them anyway. Cool. Well, that's their Speak Your Brains.
Ooh.
What was this one called again? Open ballot.
Yeah.
Open ballot. That means with Speak Your Brains over. That means it's time for open ballot.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Our question this fortnight was, do you trust the cloud? I think we can probably guess the response of the overall majority of most respondents. Too many words in that sentence.
Yeah. Did they say no?
They said no. They said no. We didn't get many people saying the choice to use the cloud is good, because choice is always good. The choice is good, brigade. We're silent on this one. Overall, people do not trust the cloud.
I think it's a good question, because it's not do you use the cloud, which I use all the time for everything, but trust is the word trust. I don't really trust Gmail with my life. And I think when we brought it up about 18 months ago, I said at the time, I really must back up my Gmail account to my home server. And I still feel the same way. My life is in Gmail. That's one method of trust. Do I trust Google to respect my data? No, not really.
Absolutely. Mike K says quite succinctly, trust, no. Use, yes.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right.
How can we not? The another one, Shadak, similar, says no, he doesn't trust the cloud. I use Google services like Gmail and Calendar and other cloud services, but I don't trust them and will move my business elsewhere eventually. Eventually is a big word.
Yeah.
I've been planning on doing it for four years
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly.
I really hope the Freedom Boxing succeeds. I really hope whatever Moglen's doing with that goes well.
Yeah.
Freedom Box?
Oh, yeah. For those who don't know, he's set up a foundation and they've raised like $80,000 or something to fund developers and project members. And they're trying to take Plug Computers, which cost, what, like £100? And are powerful enough to find a basic home server, and you can plug in massive hard drives to them, do whatever you like, and they're trying to make them into a consumer usable device, so you plug it in and it works, that's it, and it would run your own personal cloud in your home. And so you'd plug it in, you'd have your email done, it would set you up with a dynamic DNS account, it would just all be done. And all your email will be kept in your house. All your social networking will be on some federated system. All your pictures will be stored locally. You know, all your files will be stored locally. And the plan is just to make it a consumer usable device that anyone can just plug in, simply spend £100 once, and it will run for the next 20 years doing the job you want it to do.
And the data's in your house.
Yeah, which is a big thing in America. I don't know about the UK law, but according to Evan Moglen, it's a big thing in America. Because if it's in your house, it means there are all sorts of extra warrants that have to be issued before they can come and access your data.
Right.
So it adds a lot of extra protection So
that sounds like a great idea.
It's a fantastic idea.
If you could buy just a single package, you know, which had Gmail, Dropbox equivalent, you know, doc editing equivalent, all through a web portal that's running off a Plug computer.
You would do it, wouldn't you? I would do it now.
I mean, I'm not terrified of Google doing anything with my data. I just like to have control over it.
Yeah, yeah. I think for people who are in Libya or wherever, in China, it's even more important.
Yeah, of course.
This is Another good point raised by Simon, who says, I'm in love with Dropbox and use Gmail. It's important to have backups. Another important point is that if the data centers are in the US, they're subject to American law and not your own country's. And again, a sheepy says, I'm in the UK, but if I use a USA-based or headed cloud provider, I bet they'd hand my data over to the US government without much questioning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which they would, of course. There's actually, this question was raised at 101's data center.
How much is the cheapest hosting plan, Andrew?
I don't know. I've not been bought to that extent. But I really should have brought my notes with me.
You made notes.
That was yeah.
I suppose you had to make notes.
He was drawing a path to find the exit.
Lots of
getting lost in
many PowerPoint presentations. But they, as part of their marketing thing, they're about to start offering services in the like cloud installations of WordPress, Drupal, PHP, bulletin board, all sorts of things that are a real pain to set up. I mean, having configured Dropbox Drupal myself, it's just awful. If I could pay someone, you know, £10 a month to do it for me, I'd be so much happier doing that.
Who would you pay?
Well, same here if you like.
Well, their question was, would you use a cloud? Would you store your data in a cloud? Most people say no. But then if you whittle that down to, would you store your data in a European cloud? People are a lot happier with that idea.
Really?
Would you store your data in a German cloud? Still more people again are happy with that, because people are aware of data protection laws and that the European Union treats data differently.
But are they also aware of the data retention laws for email and that kind of stuff?
Possibly not.
European laws on data retention stuff are pretty mad and pretty intimidating. And in the UK, the requirement to hand over encryption keys if you're asked, otherwise face jail sentence. There's some pretty mad
jail laws. Not handing over a password.
Well, yeah, I'd much rather have my data in...
Here in the UK?
In Germany than in England.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
For that reason.
No. Explain that again.
There was somebody's email was encrypted with PGP. And he refused to give them the... Or he said he'd forgotten, and he was jailed for not handing them over the key.
Yeah, you can be jailed for up to 2 years, I think.
Yeah, he got like 6 weeks or whatever it was, but he was still jailed for it.
Only the guilty have anything to hide. Yeah, of course. See, that's the thing. If you're keeping secrets, you're obviously a wrong'un.
But hang on a minute. Isn't that just violating your human rights?
And the Magna Carta, and all sorts of things.
What is the point of having a password? The whole point of having a password is that you don't want other people to access it. Now, if he committed a crime, and then probably the email was evidence of this particular event, then I understand it. But if they just ask you for your password and you say no, arrest
that's
me.
That's an offence. Yeah,
that's just bonkers.
Yeah. Although I was watching some fly in the wall prison program late the other night,
and prison,
there was an 18-year-old car thief who was in for the 37th.
18-year-old,
yeah.
Oh,
and he got bail in the morning because the crime wasn't bad enough, and he'd skipped bail on 17 previous occasions.
He'd stolen a car.
But that's a whole new subject. The thing is, what worries me about mail is that after having Gmail for however many years, 10 years, there's an awful lot of data in there. Now, I'm not cynical about government, not that cynical about government's motives and all that kind of thing. But I think with so much data over so much time, they could make it appear like I'm saying almost anything they want to, you know, if it got it. And that's here in the UK. It's 10 times, 1,000 times worse in other parts of the world.
I've said this to all of you before as well, but if you're kind of interested in, Cory Doctorow has written a fantastic story called Squiggled. It's only short. It will take you half an hour to read. It's a clever reimagination of what could be done with this data. And it's not saying it will happen. It's not saying it definitely will do. But it does give you reason, you know, pause for thought to think why this should concern you at least a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's an enjoyable read.
So back to you, the listeners. I've in blue highlighter, I've drawn over some points, which I'm about to read out now.
Fantastic.
Biggles 1000, definitely not. The cloud is like inviting a complete stranger to have an in-depth look around your whole house. More words. Besides, what's wrong with having a wardrobe full of hard drives?
I wonder what he was going to say then.
Body parts.
What's wrong? What is wrong?
I was thinking about something worse.
The, Simon who's...
What is on the hard drives anyway?
Lolcats.
As discussed. Simon said, and if the data centers are in the US, they're subject to American law, not your country's. An expat, someone in China, says the internet here in China is just so slow and often drops out, it's hard to trust. Possibly it's hard to trust for other reasons. Ryup Deryut Churid Ryup Deryut says, as any Linux user, I have the possibility to turn my PC into a server. I'm lucky I have a fast internet connection, a large hard drive, and a decent processor RAM combination, so why should I put my data on someone else's system? I can do what all the cloud services propose to do for me. I can even share it with friends. That's true. We all have that ability.
Maybe we should do a tutorial on actually doing something like John's saying.
Yeah.
What, setting up your own freedom box?
Yeah.
That'd be good.
That does sound good.
It does sound like a really good idea.
Yeah.
I think we should do that and then put it online like as soon as it's out, that kind of thing.
Build your own cloud.
Yeah. From a Greek's perspective, this bloke sounds like he's your mate. He sounds like an elitist. Meta Sansana says, in programming, it is often said that the only code you should trust is your own. That applies to the cloud as well. That's a bit silly, I reckon, only using stuff that you've written.
Yeah, that's maybe to an extent. But like, there was recently it was revealed that Dropbox has had a backdoor in it, in its encryption.
Really?
To governments government security agencies into your data.
Oh, no, after I ridiculed tinfoil hat wearers. I didn't ridicule them. I'm sorry, tinfoil hat wearers, you were right.
Yeah.
Of course, you can easily get around that if you're inside your Dropbox folder, you have another folder that you've encrypted yourself. We'll keep it
until
safe.
They ask you for the key.
Until they ask you for a key, in which case you go to jail.
Well, back to from a geek's perspective. Of course, if you just store some OGG or MP3 files in the cloud, then you won't even care once they back up your data. If you're a company and your cloud provider gets punned, well, then you're just being punished for being cheap and not setting up your own data center. So, I don't know, everyone should have a flywheel and diesel engines and stuff. Ganesh77 says he trusts the cloud as much as you would trust the local weather. So, use the cloud, but carry an umbrella, I guess. Keep your own backups. Yeah. Yes, no, Hugh says. Cool. It depends entirely on the provider, doesn't it? It is, pardon the pun, a nebulous term.
The only provider you can really trust is yourself.
Yeah.
Even if you set up a company with the very best of intentions, you just don't know what's going to happen.
I'd like to go back, and this is really lame, I think, but I'd like to go back and read the discussions that went on with the framing of the US Constitution, because I got a feeling they had a lot of the similar arguments, but about whether you can trust government and how you go about that. I only have a vague idea of this, but I'd like to go back and read it and see how it applies to what's happening today with companies and cloud storage.
That sounds really interesting.
It would be.
Bazza. Nope. All in caps. That was worth reading out. Anonymous user. Italian post offices have a centralized system supplied by IBM and HP. And some days they have big problems. Italian post services in not working perfectly. Shock. XKCD lover says that other than that, it is so ill-defined that it just means... Hang on, I've said that wrong. XKCD lover says that the cloud is so ill-defined that it just means any service on the internet. In that, you might as well ask, do I trust the internet?
Yeah. I think thinking it through, the main problem is that cloud stuff is just so damn convenient that it's almost like a drug. You can't pull yourself away from it because it offers so many advantages, even though you know you should.
even though, you know, there are so many risks and dangers, especially in other parts of the world and here as well.
The other thing is as well, but not just convenient, but a lot of the web services, especially Gmail, so much better than any of the desktop stuff that's out there.
Yeah.
It's actually leaps and bounds ahead of it. It's a better experience.
Well, Gmail, we have, I don't even know what our future mail service is.
Well, it's Exchange.
It's Outlook. Exchange, Outlook.
But it's rubbish.
Yes.
The web service, right?
Yeah. Appalling. It's so bad. And this is something
that... So is Entourage.
But this is something that Future's paid money for.
Yeah.
And yet the free Gmail is free and it's so much better. It's better in... The search facility is better, more storage.
It has a search facility.
Yeah. You don't... I mean, we get emailed every so often saying, oh, your mailbox is getting full. You only have 2 gig of storage. But there's no way of checking how much storage you're using up. You just have to wait for this email. And it's just pathetic. Even Hotmail's better than that.
Yeah. Hotmail's quite good these days.
Yeah. Thanks, John. Sponsored by Microsoft.
Well, thanks very much, Andrew. Thanks, guys. That was a great podcast. Missed Mike, but hopefully he'll be back next time. That's it for...
No, stop.
What?
I've got one more thing. Sponsored by One and One.
Wow.
One more thing sponsored by One and One. One and One. Web hosting.
Is that it?
No, there's actually a point. They've, as aforementioned, they've got loads of servers, loads of stacked up machines. And they, most of their customers choose Linux hosting rather than Windows.
Oh, that's interesting.
95% to 5 globally.
Wow.
And this makes them happy because they make so much more money off Linux. They, on one server, they can fit 500 Windows customers.
Yeah.
How many Linux customers will fit on the same server? Same amount of data, same number of pages. If you're listening at home, why not have a guess?
So this isn't about storage. It's about a single server.
Yeah.
How many instances
you can get on.
And what are we allowed to know what virtualization framework they're using?
You're allowed to know, but I don't know.
Well, it's obviously a lot more. So
a lot more? A lot more. You know already, John.
I know, yeah.
Effie?
It's going to be a lot more.
Okay, 2,000.
They've tested up to 25,000.
Oh, wow.
But in practice, they use 5,000.
That's remarkable. That really is remarkable. So it's a serious bottleneck, a limitation for Windows.
Yeah. Linux for the massive, epic, huge win.
Yeah.
10 times. Well, those
that
you can
is amazing.
Multiply 500 by 5.
Just the efficiency of that. I just can't believe it can handle it.
I mean, this is something that I've been thinking a lot. I said this to you earlier, Andrew, that in any professional industrial scale system, you know, whether it's content creation, you know, with music creation apps or, cine paint and stuff like that, open source and Linux is the rival of any proprietary system out there. And in fact, most times better, maybe even more suited to the task. And it's only in the consumer space where it really lags behind.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. Well done, everyone.
Yeah.
And that's the end of episode 11. Thanks for listening. Don't forget you can subscribe, tuxradar.com/subscribe. And we'll hopefully all see you again.
And like us on Facebook.
Yeah, like us on Facebook, whatever that means. And we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Bye.
Bye.
Adios.